Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.
So, welcome back to the Down at Third Man podcast, and I am exceptionally pleased to say that after last week and the amazing day one, England didn't let us down. They can bat as well as bowl very well, and it was a great, great win for England that we'll get to talk about in a little bit. Before we do, though, obviously, as always, we want you guys to go and support our supporters, Woodstock. Go on their website. I'm sure they'll have a few end-of-season deals coming up. Have a little gander. Use our discount code THIRDMAN25 and get yourself some of the best kit around. Of course, our charity partners at Cardiac Risk and the Young, they had a great weekend or a great day down at Port Hill for the Nathan Butler Memorial Day, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. Obviously, you can support them by donating to our Just Giving. We've got loads of bat stickers to give away. And I know Jono, if he joins us tonight, or if not next week, we'll be talking a lot about their cry day down at Bingland. But for now, Jono isn't with us because I think he's still looking after the dog while Chantal's at work. So also with me tonight is everyone's favourite ginger, Aid Lalo. How are we, dude?
I'm all right, mate. I wouldn't go that far, but...
Well, it's between you, Tom Knight, and Tom Perkins, mate, so, I mean...
sounds like a very close race, that does.
I won't even mention it, mate, I won't even mention it. Before we get anywhere else, can we just talk about your strike rate on Sunday? Because, I mean, I don't want to mention it now, mate, but it was we didn't quite get over the line, did we?
What are you on about? The second game or the first game?
Second game, mate.
The first game
was unreal.
I still had a six, though.
You still had a six, mate.
That's, I went everyone else was getting out, mate, and I thought I'm going to steady the ship, and then...
They crumbled a little. Oh, well. Right, no one really gives a shit about our room charity day, I'm sure. So, on to England-India. Third test. Quite early on, day four. Absolutely rampant victory. I think it was by 70-odd runs and an innings for England. Not only did, obviously, they bat very well, Root hitting 100. Malan got I think it was about 70. You got, obviously, Haseeb and Hamid and Roy Burns both got 60-odd. But the bowling was class, obviously. Jimmy Anderson had been class in the first innings alongside Ollie Robinson. And then second innings, another fiver for Ollie Robinson, whose first four tests have been absolutely class. And I've got to put it out there, Craig Overton really impressed me as well. Having not been sure about him in the past, looked a lot better. Dude, what did you make of the victory in the end?
It was nice, obviously, to actually get a decent partnership opening the batting. Well, all the top four scored 50, didn't they?
Yeah.
So that was nice. Obviously, Root, the main man, gone up to number one in the world, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He was far best. At best, I've chipped in. So, you know, they did a very good job with the bat. Obviously, started off with the ball, though, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, to win the toss and bat and get rolled for under 100, you've not done very well.
No.
And then, we just have stages, seems, to, against India, where... And in like one session, we can just either win or lose a game.
Yeah.
And obviously, we had the first day, first session, and then was it the fourth day, first session? On the Saturday, it was just like...
Roll through them while they weren't there.
Well, mate, the two down, next are all out. It was like, oh.
Yeah.
Say the...
I know I keep banging on about it, but Test cricket isn't the greatest at the moment. I think particularly you look at batting... I know people go on about how bad England's batting is, but I think the reason New Zealand are clearly the best team in the world is because everyone in their top six, seven can bat and bat well, get averages, I think, is it over 40 or whatever in the last two or three years. You look at India, and I think just like England, they've only got two, maybe three, average over about 36 in the last 3 years. I mean, I think I read somewhere Kohli currently, if you take into account things, the last 2 years only averages 20-odd. You look at like Pant, everyone raves about Pant, but he's been very poor so far. Rahane and Pujara look like they may be over the hill, I think it would probably be fair to say. yeah, they're going to dig in and get the odd 50, maybe even the odd 100, but don't look like they're regularly going to score runs. So I think there's been a big, it's been a big shock to a few people, but in reality, I don't think it is that shocking. I think England, even when England are missing probably three or four of the starting 11, are still going to give India a good game at home and still beat them as many times as they'll lose to them. I think that's, and I think with Wokes coming back and people coming back this week, that might mean that England actually becomes slight favourites, which is a surprise, because at the beginning, I think we were all a little bit worried after the first test and seeing in the second test that we couldn't do it without Ben Stokes. And possibly you could also include Archer and Wokes into that. Obviously, winning meant Root becomes England's most successful captain ever. As you said, he's now world number one. He's a sixth century, is it? He only needs another 300-odd runs to become the highest ever run scorer in a calendar year.
Oh, don't get me started on that. I made myself like a rat pie for training the other day.
Oh, go on then.
I said, oh, Joe Root's on for 14,000 runs in a span. I was like, oh, I didn't mean that. And then see fire before it's happening.
Brilliant. What do we make of Root? I mean, I think I can understand why some people are saying, yeah, he might have won the most games, but he's not obviously the most successful, as in he hasn't won an Ashes, so you can't class him as the most successful as such, but you can't argue with his batting form.
Yeah, he's been unreal. Like, for a while, he'd been getting runs of, like, abroad, and then in England, he just struggled. It seemed like he was never going to get 100 at home, and then now he got 3 and 3.
Yeah.
Just carrying on from the winter. But obviously, he's number one in the world at the minute for a reason, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is the best batsman in the world.
I know you like a stat from me, so do you want a stat?
Go on then.
That I believe that earlier in the year when he scored two centuries in a row against Sri Lanka, and then obviously in the first test against India, and then obviously the last three tests he scored a century in each, I believe that before that he'd never actually scored back-to-back centuries. And now he's done three in a row twice within the space of 9 months, which
yeah,
is a fair.
He had that conversion rate problem, didn't he, that yeah, everyone was moaning about. But obviously,
yeah, he's averaging.
He's kind of getting
only averaging 50, but he doesn't get tons. He only gets 84s, and now it's like, yeah, I think that's a bit better now. Just a quick one on India. What did you make of their batting? And then as a bowler, what did you make of Ishant Sharma? Because he was clearly trusted by Kohli, but he was bit fecking shite, I think it's fair to say.
Definitely match fixture in that first over, by the
way. Enjoyed that first over, didn't we?
He won't be playing this game. I can't see him playing this game.
No.
Ashwin's probably going to come in for him. Because the other bowlers have actually done pretty well, haven't they? Throughout the series. But then again, if you can't do well in England, you're never really going to do very well as a seam riser.
Yeah, no.
They're obviously going to play Jadeja just as a bit of balance, aren't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, he hasn't been the best, has he? He was all right that the first one, but then yeah, he's not done much since, has he?
No, he's been a bit disappointing. I think he's probably dropped to the bottom of the line. I think even people like Shardul Fakhour are probably ahead of him now, or should be anyway, because he just did not look good at all. And I was very shocked that they continued to throw him the new ball. It just seemed a bit bewildering, really, because. And opened each day with him because it just wasn't working at all. Mentioned the fourth test there, so obviously England squad's had to change a little bit, and England will have to make at least one change. Josh Butler's obviously left the squad so that he can be at the beer for his second child, which is fair enough. In for him comes Billings, which I think is fair enough as a backup because they reckon Ben Folkes isn't quite up to speed yet. Great to see, though, Chris Wokes is back in. And also Mark Wood is back in. Saqib Mahmood, I think, has gone now to back up. In terms of England, Wokes and Wood, did he come straight back in? Or
Wokes, yeah.
Who for? I think it's obvious, but...
Sam Curran, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll just slot him 8, won't he?
Yeah.
And then it all depends on the pitch, though, doesn't it?
The Oval's normally a flat road, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll get him in then. But then it's a bit harsh to drop Overton.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'd be very harsh to drop Overton, to be fair.
But then again, if you do have... I know, obviously, we get away with it with Bastion. But if you look at Wokes, Anderson's probably the quickest one out of Wokes, Anderson, Robinson, yeah. and Overton. But then Overton's got that bit of height, hasn't he?
Yeah. I think I'd be. It depends on the pitch, and it depends on, I guess, how fit Mortwood really is. But I'd be tempted, just because of the way we're playing, to bring him in. I think he might just make that little bit of difference, possibly on a flat one. The other, obviously, change that will have to happen is someone's got to come in at either, well, we assume five, but I guess it could be six, because Bairstow's going to take the gloves. They've already said that. So it's who comes in at five/six. And in the moment, well, it is definitely a battle between Ollie Pope and Dan Lawrence. Now, I think most pundits are going for Ollie Pope. I think they like, obviously, how he plays, his style. But I'm going to be controversial and say I would still go Dan Lawrence, because he is in the better form in terms of, he is the one who's last scored some runs that were meaningful for England. And I just don't know. Pope, every time I've seen Pope, he looks very good, but I never feel like he's going to score more than 20, because you can just see he's going to miss a straight one, or he's just going to nail one straight to first slip. And I don't know why. There's something about him at the moment. And I don't know if it's just because it gets highlighted, because he is Ollie Pope and he's meant to be England's next big thing, but he just always seems on the verge of getting out just as his stop gets going, sort of thing. Who would you begin with at number five? Including people, I guess, who aren't in the squad, if you want to.
I think, obviously, well, do you reckon they'll keep Bairstow at five, or do you reckon they'll push him down? Again, I know it's only one place, but you are messing about again.
Well, that's it, isn't it? I feel like I'm just keeping him at five.
He's not too bad, so I'll just keep him at five. Hopefully, if the top order do all right, he'll still have a bit of rest in between. But knowing us, we'll probably be 20 for four at some point anyway, so it won't really make much difference, five or six. I'd probably go Pope. Like I say, ability-wise, I'd say he's obviously better than Lawrence. And it's his own ground. I'm guessing it says his own ground, isn't it?
Yeah, he does average 100 there.
Oh, he's in, mate.
He's never played a test there, but he does average 100 there. Yeah. Which I guess is why most people will go with him. And I think it'll be a case of, if he doesn't score runs at the Oval, then he will be. I think he will then be out to Dan Lawrence. I think that'll be how it works. I think Dan Lawrence has got a good record in Australia. There's two tests left till we go to Australia. Pope's going to be given the first chance to audition. If he does well, he keeps it. He goes probably to Australia, being that sort of backup, the number one backup batsman in the middle order, because you'd assume Stokes was going to be in there, but obviously that's still an assumption. And yeah, you'd think Lawrence is maybe then the option after him because of how well he's done previously in Australia. Butler obviously is missing. It seems to be, and I don't know how true it really is, but there's a couple of people, I think it's Tim Wigmore, Barney Ronnie, I think it has been pundits, journalists putting out that they seem to think that's the end of Josh Butler and Test. Do we think that's the case, or do we think people are maybe just looking a bit too much into the fact he wants to be at the beer for his child, and then he might not go to the Ashes because his wife and kids might not be able to go, and he doesn't want to spend 3 months away from his newborn child?
You can see an argument for both. You can see that, obviously, recently he's not done too bad, has he? So you think he probably will play again at some point. But if he doesn't play the end of this series and doesn't play in Australia, if someone does reasonably well, just for example, Bairstow with the gloves, do you keep him with the gloves then?
Yeah.
You know, we might play if there's a few injuries, but it could be. You don't know for 100%, do you? Because anything can happen. You might once then, after the Ashes, get an injury that keeps him out for a year, and then it might be done. But I don't think you can guarantee. You can just say for fact that he isn't gonna play. But he probably isn't gonna play for a while.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't see him bringing him back for the fifth test, even if he maybe is available. I think there's maybe a bit too much rushing him around, and I don't see why if you want to be at the beer, surely you want to spend the first couple of weeks as well. Especially if you then know full well, which I'm sure he does, he's going to be going surely to the T20 World Cup. I know he's obviously not going to the IPL, so that gives him probably an extra three or four weeks maybe at home, but I can't see him spending leaving his child and his wife for 5 days of cricket.
There could be a chance he doesn't play again, because I think once Morgan retires, he's going to be probably the one TNT, and Matt is just on that. Because we have got quite a few players that are around, I'm guessing he's around 30, 31, is he?
Yeah.
That, you know, we've got a few players around that, you know, you're not getting any younger, but I don't know. I can see both arguments for it.
Yeah, I think it's very much 50-50, because I can see both arguments and I can understand, but I think if it was down to Butler, I could see him picking either or, to be honest. I don't think there's a massive argument to do one or the other for someone like him. Looking at India, obviously you mentioned you'd bring Ashwin in for Ishant Sharma. Do you see any other changes? Maybe Ishard Al Fakhour coming in so they can rest one of Shami, Siraj or Bumrah maybe, but it's a bit of a risk. And do you see a change to Pujara or Rahane, who seem to be under pressure?
Well, Pujara got 90, didn't he, so I don't think they can drop him.
But enough people want him dropped, I just don't think.
And didn't Rahane get any? They got 50-odd the last game.
I think he got a few. He's got a few, Ante, and he probably saved himself by tallying Kohli to review.
Yeah, I can just see one change in the ball. I can't see any of the seamers, apart from, obviously, Ishant Sharma being dropped for Ashwin, but because the other three have done actually pretty well, so I could probably. Yeah. And you're not going to rest it with 1-1 when you've just been battered, are you?
You wouldn't think so.
Go out and try and smash England, aren't you?
You would hope so, mate. You would hope so. So prediction for this, for the fourth test, I'm going to go for a draw. There's a reasonably good chance, by the looks of it, of rain on day 4 and 5. The oval's normally quite flat. I wouldn't be shocked to see both England and India put reasonable scores on, not massive, but reasonable enough, 300, 350 each. And then with rain and stuff, just not really get to that sort of position where a team really goes for the win. And I think both teams would probably be quite happy to take it to a decider at Old Trafford.
Yeah, if there's rain about, then for 2 days, you're probably going for a draw, aren't you? But if not, it can go either way. Both batting lineups are fragile as anything.
Yeah.
And it can literally take one or two sessions and the game's done. Like, you know, we were favourites that test before for however long of the game, and
exactly,
didn't end up winning. So with these two sides, especially in England, in India, I'd just go India. But
yeah,
in England, it's literally just flipping a coin, I think.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can probably get a win at this one, because at Old Trafford it might, you know, spin, and if they've got Ashwin and Jadeja and we're just playing Bowie Nally, that might blow you 5 overs, it's like, I'm worried.
Yeah, I still think England, if we had a full squad, it'd be favourites at home, but I don't see when we're still missing Stokes, who I think still makes a huge, huge difference. And you are missing Broad as well, and you are missing that sort of different option of Archer. As much as I like Wood, I think Archer's a different level altogether. I think he evens it out. And so I'm with you, it is a 50-50, but I think the rain, well, not hopefully, but will end up sort of leading us to what might end up being quite a boring draw, possibly. Obviously, there's loads of cricket going on elsewhere. County Championship. Notts have pulled off a massive, massive shot win by over an innings against Somerset today. I think they hit over 400 odd. And then managed to bowl them out, Somerset out way short. And then Somerset bowled out again just. I think Luke Fletcher took the last wicket. Big win for them, so fair play to them. Just having a look at some of the sort of key performances, standout performances. Darren Stevens, I think it was 67 ball ton or something along those lines, spanking it around the park as he does for Kent. Can't be far off a call up, surely. He actually looked.
He's never getting a call, mate. Let's be honest.
Mate, we'd love
to see him. He ain't getting a call.
We need to play Ireland again. I feel like if we played someone like Ireland again or Afghanistan in a test, he'd maybe give him a go. But some of the stats are, like, about him, I know he's obviously, let's be honest, a bit too old to be even for us to be considering. But when you actually look at his stats, you just think, oh my God, like, how is this bloke still doing it? And so fair play to him, Mark. Another person who stood out today, Josh Bohannon for Lancashire. Bats at 3, averages very highly, I think. Possibly sort of high 40s. Hit a 170 today. Talks of maybe he's the next person sort of be lined up for those top three, that sort of number three spot. If it doesn't work for Milan, obviously Milan, I think, will get the Ashes now probably, as well as the next two games. So a couple of big performances there. And Gary Balance, another England number three, is at 100 today. Obviously leaving Yorkshire, which I think there's a possible controversy around that. But he scored another 100 today. And people will always, I think, say that they felt he was a bit hard done to for England. I think it was maybe as much an attitude thing as it was an ability thing. Looking at the counties, there's been some big signing news. Chris Jordan's left Sussex, gone to Surrey, back to captain his boyhood club. Phil Salt has left Sussex, gone to Lancashire to replace Alex Davies, it basically seems. And Steve Finn has gone to Sussex from Middlesex, so a few big signings there. Elsewhere, there's been big signing, been quite a lot of signings in the IPL and Big Bash. Big Bash are just re-signing people. So you've got the likes of Alex Hales and James Vince going back to Sydney Thunder and Sydney Sixers, respectively. And you've got a few other sort of foreign name, overseas names being announced. And the IPL have announced quite a few of the replacement players. I'll be honest, KKR replacing Pat Cummins with Tim Southee seems like a little bit of a downgrade. But there's been a few good ones in and around there. And I've seen, I think today, Rajasthan have announced Evan Lewis is one of theirs to come in. So couple of good signs. I think the IPL will be a lot weaker than it is normally. I think there's going to be quite a few choose to not go.
When does it start?
It starts 5 days after the England Test Series finishes.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's not going to be quite as good a standard. Obviously, it's still probably going to be a lot better standard than every other competition, but there'll be quite a few big names, I think, in the end missing out there. And then the last thing that I've got to talk about, because the CPL is happening, but I don't think people are paying masses of attention to it, if I'm totally honest, with all the test stuff going on, the county stuff. But I decided to watch a little bit of New Zealand versus Bangladesh today in Dakar. Wow, I've never seen a T20 match like it. New Zealand, in reality, it looked like they were playing in a T20, their second 11 for the test team. It wasn't exactly a team I would have ever expected to see play a T20 international for New Zealand. I'll be totally honest on that. I mean, just going through the names now: Blundell, Ravindra, Will Young, De Grandhom at four, Tom Latham, Henry Nichols, McConchy, Bracewell, Patel, Tickner, and Duffy. I mean, not the team you would expect. New Zealand, there's literally none of them.
It's about 45 you've heard of, isn't there?
Yeah, literally none of them are going to the T20 World Cup either, which is a laughable thing. They were all out for 60, within 16.5 overs, on what can only be described as a beach. Unsurprisingly, as you can expect, Bangladesh were lots of spinners, six spinners, all bowled, and all did pretty well. I mean, the worst economy rate out of all of them was Rahman with 4.59, which I think says it all. And the best strike rate for New Zealand, was Henry Nichols with a 75 strike rate of 18 off 24.
Well, about
not what you expect in the T20. Bangladesh knocked it off. I think it was about 14, 15 overs. Fair play to Shakib Alhassani at 25 off 33. I think, really, if I'm honest, New Zealand were buggered by the fact that they bowled the three, four spinners out basically very, very early. The three spinners were done by the 12th over, and at that point, they were actually ahead of the game by quite a way on run rate. And it seemed more of a case of, can Bangladesh just creep over the line in 20 overs? But then, obviously, they had to bring on the seam bowlers, and the seam bowlers, it just was not suited to at all. It was very, very shite to watch. I watched five overs.
Win the T20 World Cup, mate.
Yeah, I don't think so, mate. Not unless the UAE are going to go and play it out on the beaches.
Yeah. Beat Australia 4-1, beating New Zealand, mate. They're bringing it in.
if they were playing at home, I'd fancy him. I tell you, Jesus.
Oh, I've never seen that one ball. I don't think it was on Twitter. And I don't know who bowled it and don't know who's batting, but it is rag square.
Oh, the one. I've shared one on our Twitter today.
I don't know what it was then.
I think it was Ravindra possibly for New Zealand yeah, he pings one in and there's turn and bounce in spade loads, which, yeah, it was like a beach and it just wasn't good to watch. I watched about five overs and Bangladesh, I think, managed something daft like seven or eight singles plus two or three wides.
Not was it like wanted. A D5 pitch in Sri Lanka?
It felt like it, mate. Jesus, it was not good. But hey-ho. But other than that, that's really everything that's been going on in cricket other than Dale Steyn retired, one of the best fast bowlers in the last probably decade or so. Retired, took a lot of wickets. I think it was 699 international wickets altogether. Great player, great bowler. Seems like a great guy as well, to be fair. Loves to skateboard, which always amuses me from a 6'7" fast bowler. But yeah, so best wishes to him in his retirement. Right, the last thing before we enter the usual North Star stuff is nicknames in cricket, dude. Now, I came across what I've got to say was a very amusing nickname in the pro game this week. Alex Davis is leaving Lancashire. Lancashire fans not too happy about it, but I think Lancashire all seem to be quite happy about it. They've got Phil Salt instead. And it seems, and this is only rumours, that Alex Davis is maybe not the most liked person in the dressing room. Maybe not doesn't get on with necessarily everyone involved. And I was told that apparently his nickname amongst certain people is TLC, standing for The Little See You Next Tuesday. Which I thought was an absolute beauty, and took fair play to whoever came up with that one. It was a pretty good one. So basically, we want to hear some of the ones that our listeners have heard along the lines. Any good ones you've heard, send them in. We'll have a chat about them. We'll have a laugh about them. Dude, have you come across any particularly good nicknames?
Oh, repeatable. A good one for Silverdale when he was bowling Saturday. Oh, it's Brad Evans. I can't think something like Jawhead or something like that. I don't know. I could be wrong. It was something like that, but yeah, you do hear some. I can't remember that off the top of my head, but
yeah,
I get full big red sometimes when the sun's baking down.
Nice, as you do. I must admit, one of my favourite wedges has got to be Tom Smith. His nickname is Salty, and everyone who we play against, like, who knows him, is like, why the fuck is it Salty? But it's all because one week, twos had finished, went to watch the ones, and I think we were mod, and we sat down on a bench, and Smithy sat right in front of Arun, and Arun just kept on chatting. Arun just went, "Oi, Salty, move." And he kept on going, Sam, Salty, Sam, Salt. And all of us again, like this, after a few like seconds of him saying it, we're all like turning around going, "Are you talking to H?" And he's going, "Salty, tell him move his head, he's not a very good fucking window," and all this. And we're going, "Salty, you Salty?" Like, that's Smithy. And he was like, "Oh, fuck, I don't know where that's come from." And he was just genuinely corny. He didn't realise, like, I don't know what happened, but he just, in his head, decided that Tom Smith's name was Sam Salt. So since then, he's been known as Salty.
Brilliant.
Which is just bizarre, but fair play to H.
There are certain nicknames, but you can't repeat on here.
Well, yeah, there is other
ones. People have been called.
Yeah, I mean, some are a little bit offensive, some are a little bit derogatory. Some are, I guess, quite complimentary, mate, to be fair. I mean,
you're thinking of that.
Well, just people who you may comment on in the showers, as I think they.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe complimentary.
I get where you're coming from now.
Yeah, I thought you might. So, yeah, if anyone listening can send us in a few good nicknames they've heard or they know of, or maybe they've even got. I know there's plenty out there, and I've heard plenty mentioned on other podcasts from around the country. So send us in any good ones you've heard, especially in the North Staffs, because we want a good laugh if anyone's got any North Staffs-based ones. Right then, North Staffs cricket, dude. It was quite a good weekend. It was a very, very good weekend in terms of performances from various people. I think in the Prem alone, there was something like four centuries, two seventhers and two sixthers. And of course, because if I don't mention it, you might start crying. How did we do, Lello?
Standard weekend, mate. No, I'm joking.
Standard weekend.
I had a pretty decent day, to be fair, mate. I can't really complain.
Fucking twat. So, for anyone who doesn't know.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it because it's
if anyone doesn't know, dude, I think it was 58 not out and took a fourth. They included a hat trick that you didn't realise you'd taken for 24 hours. Decided halfway through on the Sunday that, oh yeah, by the way, it was an hat trick was included. Like, oh, right, fair enough.
Well, basically, I'd obviously got one at the end of the over.
Yeah.
And then two and the other one, like. So we've got everyone in for the third ball, thinking, right, I might go an hat trick here. Bowled a decent ball, to be fair. He managed to keep it out. I was like, oh, gutting. And then I just, when there was a thingy Sunday, and I was speaking to Peaky, I went, Peaky, just do us a favour, just have a check for me. Because I hadn't got my phone on me. I was like, I don't, I'm not, you know, I could be completely wrong, but I swear that I might have done it. He checked, he was like, yeah, yeah. I was like,
Piss it. I hope you kept the match ball, if not else.
Oh, we have got a shout out for Simi, by the way.
Why?
I think he just remembered this, because we were on about nicknames and stuff, but this is to do with Simi's wife, actually. This is the other story. There was me, Liam, and someone else sat on the bench Saturday, and she says, you're getting off moving a minute. I says, why? She's like, there's someone on the bench. And I went, what do you mean? And I looked, he said, in loving memory of Simi's wife. I looked over and I was like, but she's not dead. She's literally standing right there. And then the actual thing says, not gone, but always forgotten. Left at home watching the kids waiting for the cricket to finish. And he had no idea about it until we told him in fines.
Fucking brilliant. Fair play. So before we get into the league action, we'll start off with a T20 that took place on Sunday. Audley versus Longton ended up being the final. Audley posted 117 for 4 from their 20, 42 there for Ricardo. Gordon was probably the main contribution off 27 balls. There was also 14 not out for Jamie Jervis and 18 not out for Richie Holloway. A couple of wickets there for Rich Brough, who had very good figures, only game for 11 off 4 overs as well as his 2 wickets. So well done to that man. But he wanted enough. Longton ended up winning quite comfortably. They won by 4 wickets with 3.3 overs still to spare. No runs in the top order. Ricky Vessels, sort of the main man for them, only managed 2 from 5. Ricardo Gordon got him. But it was all about the skipper, Ed Jones. Fair play to this man. 71 not out of 37 balls, including 3 fours, 7 sixes, 191.89 strike rate. Well batted that man, because that is sublime. Got him over the line comfortably in the end, despite Ricardo Gordon taking 2 for 11 off his 3 overs. Rob Emmings went for a bit of tap there, unlucky Rob, as did John Shenton as well. So unlucky boys.
Chuck the knife in there, Tim. Chuck the knife in.
Well, you know, I didn't want to mention it, but I thought I may as well mention it while I'm here. So well done to Longton, who win. They will play on Sunday in the Barney McArdle T20 final. It could possibly include Aid and Jono, but we'll get onto that in a little bit. But yeah, well done to Longton. Won, I think it's fair to say, very comfortably in the end, on a good day for them. So it made up for what was maybe not such a good day for them on the Saturday. Just going into the Prem, Bagnall won comfortably away at Ashcombe. Bagnall posted 261 for 5 declared from 49.5 overs. Runs there for Billowell Batty were 110 off 65 balls, 8 fours, 9 sixes. Well batted that man. Couple of wickets there for Mahaz Ahmed again. Ashcombe Park 133 all out, despite 41 from Josh Johnson. The wickets were 7 for Freddie Dorbar, so well bowled that man. And 3 there for Greg Willett as well. So good win there for Bagnall, taking home 23 points. Meekins keep the lead at the top of the table. 267 for 4 from their 50 overs. Meant that they had a big total on the board, and Modestrull and Alton didn't get close. They were 111 all out. For Meekins scoring the runs, Ben Maguire were 50 up top, and then Michael Hill with 119 not out off 164 balls, and then Simon McGarvett was 65 not out of 43 balls. Interestingly, James Maru got 1, Sam Moore's got a duck, and Pete Wilshaw got a 1. They were the other batsmen. So it seemed that if you got in, it was a day for scoring runs, but if you didn't, you really didn't. I'd say Modestrull got a hammering, really. 111 all out. There was 20 for Sam Kelsall, 9 for Rizwan Hussain, 18 for Dan Mitchell, and 19 not out for Theo Wiley. But yeah, bit of a battering there. 4 for Matt Redican, 3 for Carlisle, and a couple there for Paul Byrne as well. Leek got a pasting at home to Cheadle. Very disappointing day for them. They won the toss, they chose to field, and Cheadle only put 155 for 9 on, so you'd have probably fancied your chances. Oz Crump getting 50, Matt Sellers getting 30, 4 wickets there for Alex Thompson. But Leek, 61 all out. Rory Hayden got 14 and Rory Jackson 24. Other than that, single figure scores all the way through. 61 all out, as I say. 6 for Jack Winfield. Cruise to victory there for Cheadle. Moving on to Checkley Longton. Much better game there, a bit closer game. Longton went first. 226 all out from exactly 50 overs. Tom Steele with 108, another century there. 41 for Tom Hope. 7 for there for James Crony. 7 for 47. Good effort, to say the least. And Checkley managed to win it with just a couple overs to spare, 6 down. Scott Alston got 43. James Crony topped off his day with 33. Simon Guy got 38. And it was Michael Allen with 28 not out. And Brendan Love with 26 not out that got him over the line. Port Hill got a crushing victory against Stone. Would be very, very happy with, I'm sure. John Hancock led from the front, having won the toss and chose to bat 128 out of 115, backed up by 50 from Louis Allison and 21 from Ben Cotton. And then they bowled Stone all out for 104. Ben Motley got 21 and Shanaka Ekaneaka got 32. It's very impressive. I haven't even attempted that. 3 for there for Matt Coxon, 4 for Craig Barker, and a couple for Harry Bailey as they won comfortably. And then a low scoring affair, I think it's fair to say, at Whitmore. Whitmore won the toss, chose to bat 79 all out, which when you think that Daniel Hussain opened and got 32 and Adil Arshad opened and got 20, tells you that there wasn't much going on after that. There was a golden there for Jack Beach, a second ball duck for Piers Copeland. Was 10 further down the order for Mohammed Akib. Shows you how hard it was out there because Graham White only got 1 off 3 balls. And then there's a couple more ducks lower down the order. 6 for there for Ashshaw, 3 for Mike Brown. And then Bearsham knocked it off, but it did take them nearly 30 overs to knock off 79. And they were 5 down. They managed it 82 for 5. Thanks to 20 from Ashshaw, who had a good day at the office. 28 there for Rhodesy. And 15 not out for Alex Gilson, got him over the line. So, in the Prem, having a quick little look at the table. Obviously, Meekins, following their victory, remain at the top. And because of Longton's loss, Longton actually drop into third. Meaning that, surprise, surprise, Port Hill are back in second and are within not too many points, actually. Only 13 points of Meekins. So, it could still be a Port Hill versus Meekins battle to the end.
Have they got to play each other at all, do we know?
I think they might still have to, but I could be wrong there. So
yeah, have a look.
You have a little look, mate. Ashcombe in the bottom of the league, I think they're basically down. And Leek are only 5 points off Whitmore, despite their crushing defeat, because I guess, well, Whitmore also got a crushing defeat. So it is very, very close down there. We'll rattle through the others, because my tea's going to be done in 10 minutes. So apologies to people who might have wanted like a big talk over how well they've done, because you're just not going to get it.
They don't play each other, by the way.
Oh, they don't. That's a shame. We all love a last game of the season between them. I believe Hemheath had won by 2.5, was it, on Saturday?
Yes.
Audley 51 all out in 27 overs. Banksy has become a proper all-rounder, taking a 5 for Gav Griffiths, 3 for Ben Lucas, 2 for. And they knocked it off in a huge 8.2 overs. Banksy with 32 not out. Easy win there. Blythe got a massive win at the bottom of the table against Leeset. Leeset were 133 all out. 27 from Dan Redfern and 52 from Rajpal Benywell from just 52 from just 31 balls. What a catch from Toby Degg there as well. Was all that there really was to write home about. 2 wickets for Deggy as well. Well done to the big-headed man himself. Kazeem Adams took three for, Chris Dyer took 3 for 7 off 3 overs, fair play to him. And then Blythe knocked it off, Alex Heslop opening the batting with 61. And then Kazeem Adams doing the job, 55 not out to get him over the line. Littlestoke got a big win at Eccleshall, which was a bit of a shock, to say the least. Eccleshall posted 206 for 6, thanks to 102 not out from Arsan Tariq and 38 from Dan Byatt. A couple of wickets there for Ben Green and Rhys Owens. And Littlestoke managed to knock it off with 2 overs to spare. They were 208 for 6. Ranga Rathnayake got himself 71 and 47 for Rhys Owens with the key contributions there. Gaz Morris was back and got a little 2 not out, I see. So good to see Gaz back. Alworth beat Sandiford. Alworth were 156 all out, but they then bowled Sandiford out for 101. And Knipersley Wood Lane was a draw, despite the best efforts of Wood Lane, who posted 208 for 8. Jake Thompson, our mate, getting 52 there in the middle order, down at 4. Interesting. Richie Assel got 67. Knipersley finished 194 for 7, thanks to 41 from Sam Wilcox, 34 from Andrew Jones, and 24 not out from John Cumberbatch. And then the last game of the day in Div 1 was Newcastle and Arts Hill beat Endon. Castle and Arts Hill, 150 all out, thanks to 30 from Mohamed Abid and 21 from Asif Raza. Wickets there for a couple each for Marlon Martin, Josh Reynolds, and a forfeit for Chal. And Endon were all out for 1-2-2, despite 35 for George Sellers. There was quite a few single figure scores and 40 there for Alex Bailey, the skipper. A lot of single figure scores other than that, as Deacon Pierce, as Richie Hagan, sorry, took 3 for, Mohamed Abid took 3 for, and Asif Raza took 2. Quick look at the table. Have you got the tables up, dude, or am I doing it?
I haven't got them currently, mate.
I can do it, mate. Alworth for top, more or less, well, I think they are now up, looking at that. They're about 60 points clear of Knipersley in third. Hemeath looking like they'll probably go up in second. There's Knipersley and Axel just a bit too far away. And Littlestoke look like, even despite that win, they're probably going to go down. And Leeset are now in the bottom two, with Blythe pulling out in front of them, having got that win over them. Into Div 2. Dude, do you want to quickly talk through your game for me, my mate?
Yeah, I'll probably get the scorecard up just to remind myself a little bit.
Because all you remember Silverdale, is yourself.
Silverdale started off very well. I think we were like 15 for 3, maybe. Let me have a look. Yeah, exactly 15 for 3, yeah. But then we had a good partnership between Ollie Owen and Adam Simcox. Ollie Owen got 28 and Simmy got 55. That put us to 97 for 4. Then we were 108 for 6. Pro and Ollie went. And then we ended up 213 for 6. Me and Seb were in for about 15 overs, I think. 15, 20 overs. Got us up to there. And then we got a couple of early wickets, which put us in control. We got the wickets. Peaky got 2. Pro Ali Azmat got 2. And then I got 4. Steve got 1.
You said that very quick there, dude. I got 4.
Got to get it out of the way, haven't you?
Yeah.
But Matt Baker batted really well for Silverdale. Basically, They were trying to obviously go for a win, but then once they realised they were at a stage of losing wickets, he shut up shop, got 31 off 110 balls. So obviously managed to get them a draw. And then Matt Meyer at batting 10 got 38 off 38. Which I always like about him is even if he's batting for a draw, he'll still play his shots, which is fair play to him. But yeah, so we played the better of the two sides, but they did play quite well during stages because, you know, at one point we were 15 for 3. So,
yeah, fair play. Looking through the rest of the league, Sam Batch got a big victory over me. 255 all out they were. Sam Batch from 41 overs, that's a fair run rate, fair play to them. Meerif, 151 all out, not to be for Meerif. Norton and Ailes won. massively against Barlaston. Barlaston have got had a few tankings over the last few weeks, I think it's fair to say. Norton and Ailes 2-4-4 for 8 declared. And then Barlaston 72 all out. I know Anshie even took a 6 for there. Oakmore got another win. They posted 104 all out. Probably didn't fancy the chances really with that sort of score on the board. But then Caverswell were 44 all out. So good win there for Oakmore. Port Hill 2's won quite a tight game after what you would have thought would have been quite a comfortable victory, you would have thought. All Sage 112 all out. You'd have thought Port Hill had knocked that off with ease, but they were 7 down and it did take them 30 overs, so a bit of a slow contest there. And Stafford Road Park finished as a draw, according to this, which is a fair effort because
tied one.
It seems to be tied. Yeah, tied. Stafford won the toss and batted first and were 192 for 6 from 45. Road Park managed to finish 192 for 8 from 46. So actually it comes across as a tie game where Dave Foster got 71 for Stafford and there was 47 for Ollie Gallimore there for Road Park, but they just couldn't, by the looks of it, get quite over the line. And I'm even going to look at the ball by ball because I'm that interested by it. Looking at the ball by ball, they actually only just got to the tie by the looks of it in that extra over, which is interesting. Because they got 6 on that last over. The over before that went for 19. So, big, a couple of wides there. There's a few wides, actually. So, interesting. Appears that Snape was teeing off and then got out as well, amongst other things. So, that is how it is in Div 2. We'll have a quick look at the table just to update everyone as to who's the riders and runners, I guess, as we get to the business end with 3 games to go. Norton and Ailes are basically up. I think they are up now and basically are going to be champions, you would think. Sandbach are just ahead of Silverdale. I would say that Sandbach are probably going to go up in the end. And then there's quite a big gap down to Port Hill then in 4th and Caverswell in 5th. Bingland, the boys are in 8th, just so, to let you know, dude, if you didn't know already. Probably just...
Well, what I've just noticed, by the way,
yes, mate.
All the average points have been added on, haven't they?
Yeah, and it's a complete mess just so to look at.
Can, like, see where
work out a bit, yeah.
So I've just looked in our result from Saturday. Silverdale have got 24.6 points.
Yeah, they've added them on, aren't they? Weirdly, it's bizarre, mate. Absolutely bizarre. Meary for basically down, aren't they?
Yeah, but like you're saying about Silverdale and Sandbach, obviously being close. I think it's Silverdale, Sandbach this week, maybe. I know they've got to play each other. And then Silverdale big got to play Norton and Ailes as well. So, if they go up, they'll do well because they've obviously got bigger top two.
Top two to do it. Yeah, Big Lender, 8th on 204. Then Barlaston have had average points there on 199.14. Yeah, I'll let you guys at home work that one out. Road Park on 193. And then Stafford on 189. So Stafford are just in the relegation zone, but it is very, very tight. I'd like to say Bingland and Old Sage are just enough out of it, but still probably want a result or two, don't you, just to make sure, I guess.
Well, we've got Roe Park Saturday, so...
Big game there.
Yeah, and then Old Sage the week after.
Yeah. Last but not least, we'll go quickly through Div 3, just go through the results, because... I'm sure we could go through every division if we really wanted to, but we'd literally be here all week. Longton 2's won easy against Audley CC 2's. Stone SP 2's won quite comfortably in the end against Cheadle 2's. Checkley 2's and Modron Alton 2's was a high scoring draw. Crewe, big win for them. They beat Eccleshall 2's reasonably comfortably in the end. Hampton and Longton, another high scoring draw. Hemeath 2's won comfortably against Audley 2's there, literally by 9 wickets, despite Audley putting a reasonable total on. And Wedgwood went and beat Meekins 2's quite comfortably as well. Table for Div 3, last one we'll go through. Very tight, as you can imagine, with just 3 games to go. Modern Alton 2's look like they're up, more or less guaranteed now, you would think, with a good 50-60 point lead, I think it is now. 54-point lead, sorry, it is, over Checkley, who are in third. Stone have got a good 30-odd point lead as well. They're in second, so they're looking like them two should go up, you would think. As you go down the table, Audley are bottom. They look like they are down now. Wedgwood, though, are still in the bottom two despite winning, because obviously Crewe won as well. It looks like a battle between Wedgwood and Crewe, but it's hard to say for definite. But I would assume it's going to be between those two sides. Star of the weekend this week was won by Sam Cliff of Cheadle. We had literally 12 nominations. Aid sadly didn't get out of his group. Neither did Johnny Hancock, another friend of the pod. Cheadle, fair play to the lads. They backed the boys. All three of their lads won their semi-finals. I thought, fuck it, we're going to lob Stu Burrows in as the best placed second place, you know, try and get him, try and get the lad in there to maybe give people a bit of a chance sort of thing, I guess. Sadly for Stu Burrows, he still only finished third in the final. Cheadle split the votes. Jack Winfield came third, the one who did well for their ones. Sam Akram came second, but yeah, it was Sam Cliff, who I want to say, and I'm going to have to find it now, I want to say as a 13-year-old lad who, for either their, I think for their twos, did go and score something like a 70-odd, which is fair play. That, like, for a lad to go and do that is more than a deserving winner of the of it. Yeah, 13, 74, not out, against War Seconds and Div 6. That's a great effort, so fair play to him. And I guess Sam Akram's, who's his teammate, just feeling a bit unlucky because he took a threefer and got 77 and lost to him. So poor lad there. But that's it for last week's stuff. This week, loads of big games, I think, in every single division, because the promotion and relegation battles are very, very close. And there's a T20 final on the Sunday, isn't there, Mr. Lalo?
There is, mate. I think it's 12 start, if I'm right.
I believe so, mate.
We're at home to Sandbach, and then, as you said, the winners play Longton in the Barney McCardle.
Yeah, big day. That'll be down at Bigland. I'm going to plan to be there. I'll be there with stickers as well, so if some people would like, come and get stickers off us. If you see someone with probably the crazy black and white dog, that's me. Come and
running
get a stick.
On the pitch.
Probably, yeah. I might like run on the pitch if you boys win. But yeah, so I believe 12 o'clock, as Aid says, Big Len versus Sandbach to win the T20 plate. And then after the Barney McCardle, between Longton and the winners. So big day out there. Hopefully Big Len boys will do us proud.
I hope so.
You hope so. Aid won't be playing in the Barney McCardle because it's his nephew's christening that he should be attending. But instead of attending, you're just going to go the piss-up party after, which is perfectly upstairs in Big Len Club, innit?
Oh, yeah, so I can laugh at our lot when we get spanked by Longton if we do win. So
brilliant. A bit disappointed I might not get to see you bowl at Ricky Vessels, though, but hey-ho, these things happen. Right, that's us done for another week because my tea's done. I think dude's got something that he wants to go do. I don't know what. But
eat.
Yeah, eat, fair play. Catch up on Married at First Sight UK, mate. Best programme.
I've not watched it, but I've heard it's good.
Yeah, you need watch, mate. Don't know if it's going to be as good as the Aussie one, but fair play, it is still good. So, as always, go and check out Woodstock. Support Cry as much as you can. Before we forget, Nathan Button Memorial Day, great success. I've heard rumours that Craig Charlton, Charlie Wenton's got a six off the last ball to win it in the final for the Smash the Tash team. Everyone knows he's a local legend. I think we'll try and get him on the podcast over the next few weeks or during the winter for have a little chat. So fair play to Charlie there. But a big well done to Dan Hancock, Josh Butler, Nathan's brother, who I know from Kiel. They've had a great day there. They've managed to raise over 10 grand for Cry. That means over 200 screenings will take place in the next couple of months in the local area. So big well done to them. So please keep supporting Cry. Jono next week will talk us all through the Cry Day for Danny Hughes, and it will be happening at Big Lend on the 12th. So he'll talk us through that. And we
is
might
that Wood Lane, mate?
Is it Wood Lane, is it now?
Wood Lane, yeah.
And I'm sure Jono will talk us through that and maybe even get a guest on to do with Cry to talk about a little bit more. But thanks for listening. As always, follow us, subscribe to us, review us. We love to see as appearing in random countries on their podcast charts, or just see us randomly appearing above, like, paid people who actually paid to make podcasts, suddenly being above them in the charts, or being above, like, an actual professional, well-known cricketer in the charts, always amuses us. So please follow us, subscribe to us, and view us, because that helps with that. And we'll be back next week. As I say, we'll probably be talking a lot about Cry. We'll be talking, no doubt, about, obviously, the fourth test at the Oval that starts tomorrow. And no doubt looking forward to the last test at Old Trafford. Dude, go well at the weekend. Make sure you win on Beat Road Park so that you'll more or less be safe, and then go and win the T20. And hopefully I'll see you pissed up.
Well, you don't want much, do you, there?
No. Well, you know, two wins and a piss up. What more could we want?
Well, I'm sure. Sounds like a good weekend, mate.
Sounds like a very good weekend. Shame it's not a bank holiday, mate.
I'll do, yeah.
And to everyone who's listening, go well as well. I hope you have a good weekend, unless you're playing one of us, obviously. No offence.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Have a good weekend, and we will see you next week for another hour of us talking shit. Cheers.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky with so many options to choose from. How do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value, and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning, high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage, and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes. Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players, and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.